This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 17th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 409. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature. 8 years ago this week, on August 19th, 2017, 4,000 people surrounded Vancouver City Hall to oppose a handful of anti-immigration protesters. Since then, the Canadian mainstream consensus about immigration has changed. A new poll by Research Co. says Generation X and Baby Boomers want fewer newcomers because of the state of healthcare, education, and housing. Research Co.'s Mario Canseco is my guest. Also, a Vancouver summer tradition returns. The 115th Peony Fair runs through Labor Day. One of the featured exhibits, Sands of Wonder. Creative director David Billings of Sand Demons Sand Sculpture Company joins me to talk about the temporary masterpieces.
This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
Mario Canseco has published his latest research from Research Co. on immigration trends, Canadians' attitudes towards immigration in 2025, and they have changed. They have changed drastically in recent years. In a country of immigrants, Canadians want less immigration. Mario, what are the takeaways from the new poll?
Well, it certainly confirms what we saw back in 2024, which is a significant drop in the way Canadians feel about immigration. We had practically 60% of Canadians just a few years ago who felt that immigration was having a positive effect in the country. Now it's dropping closer to 40%. So we went essentially from a 2-to-1 margin on people feeling positive about immigration to what is essentially a 50-50 split. A lot of this is happening, particularly with the Generation X and baby boomers concerned about services, particularly when it comes to healthcare. And it's the younger generation that is affected, particularly when it comes to housing, that continues to have more positive views on immigration to the country.
Is it really driven by the scarcity of doctors, the scarcity of seats in schools, transit seats? You know, basically people need to get around, people need to get educated, and people need to get their medical needs looked after, and it's harder to get that nowadays.
Well, there's a certain element of an urban-rural divide, especially when you look at the numbers in specific provinces. In Atlantic Canada, for instance, a very low proportion of residents, 30%, believe that immigration has been positive. We still see a little bit of higher numbers when we move out west. But a lot of what tells the story is ages, and this is definitely more likely to be connected with healthcare with the over 55s. We know that it's an issue that they care about more than their younger peers. Our expectation was that housing would become an issue that would make the 18 to 34 year olds doubt the policies that we have in place right now to deal with immigration, but it's not something that is happening at this particular stage. The other issue that is quite eye-catching is the way in which Canadians are feeling about policies as a whole. We used to be a country that embraced the mosaic, and now we have roughly the same proportion of people who are happy with the mosaic or who would like to move to more of an American-style melting pot, which is quite remarkable after 10 years of liberal rule, to have so many Canadians not really happy with a policy that has been in the books for the federal government since 1971.
Now, this is a country of immigrants, of course, but it's also a country which has thrived in immigration, yet in recent years, really the floodgates have opened, and a lot of immigrants have come to work in lower-paying service jobs. That this seems to have driven down the cost of labor, when in fact Canada is a country that is so highly sought after around the world. This could have been an opportunity for Canada and Canadians to recruit more doctors, for instance, more highly educated people that to fill the spots that we need in order to reduce the wait times at hospitals, for instance. It could have been an opportunity to go and recruit more teachers, more academics, to again expand the education system, to have more seats. This scarcity is brought by
Canada really not going out and filling those jobs that are needed to lift the country up. Yet we're seeing more lower service, lower cost service jobs, which is making it harder for people to enter the economy, especially high school students or first or second year university students needing work. So is that also part of what's driving this?
Well, I think we see a higher level of concern about this from the older generations because of the way in which they're experiencing some of the services that they require. Part of the complexity, especially when it comes to recognizing credentials from foreigners, is that it's a process that is too long. And you know, if you're somebody who's waiting to see a specialist, for instance, this isn't going to solve your problem with the immediacy that you would hope for. There's also a significant level of animosity towards the concept of the schools that are offering degrees to anybody who essentially has the opportunity to come into the country. There's a certain level of criticism towards the policies that we have right now. And we see it also in the fact that we have roughly about 2 in 5 Canadians who are calling for a decrease in legal immigration levels. It's a little bit lower than it was last year when it hit 46%, but it's still the preferred choice by a plurality of Canadians. It's not as if we have a significant proportion who want to increase these levels or who believe that what is being done right now is the correct course of action.
Yeah, looking back about 8 years ago, the rallying cry was refugees welcome, you know, keep the doors open, welcome the world to come to Canada and enjoy the status of life we have here. Also 8 years ago, there was a rally at Vancouver City Hall against critics of immigration. There were there was a small group of people from Alberta that came to protest at City Hall as part of an anti-immigration campaign, but they were met with several thousands of people who came to Vancouver City Hall. That was back when Gregor Robertson was mayor. Do you think that that kind of rally could happen again to support immigration, or do you think that kind of rally could happen and be an anti-immigration rally in Vancouver? We've seen anti-immigration rallies in other countries, Ireland especially. Could that happen here?
It's pretty much a 50-50 split when we look at the way in which Canadians feel about the effect of immigration, whether it's positive, whether it's negative. I think if we go back to some of those protests that we've seen in the past, it was essentially a small group that was trying to rile up people and anti-immigrant sentiments. Now it's a lot different. I think we are moving past the situation where the complaints about immigration on social media in Canada, for instance, mirrored what we saw in the United States. Now it's become more about cost of life, about the complexities that Canadians are facing in their own lives. And we need to factor in the housing situation. Even though the 18 to 34 year olds would be allegedly the ones who would be more likely to complain about immigration because they can't get into the housing market, it's part of what is making this issue compelling for those age 35 to 54 and those over the age of 55. It's going to be very difficult to try to deal with this from the standpoint of changing existing legislation. Any effort, for instance, to try to get away from the ban on foreigners owning real estate in Canada is going to be met with a significant level of animosity from the public.
Yeah, finally, how do you think this can be turned around? How can Canadians get back to trusting the immigration system and welcoming foreigners here to join the Canadian mosaic? How can this be fixed?
Well, I think one of the issues that the government needs to deal with is the communications related to how the system is working, particularly when it comes to temporary foreign workers, the way in which people who come to Canada, students, can stay here and try to get a job and to make a life for themselves. But it's also about the type of immigration that is required. And part of what we have is a situation where the reaction, particularly from European Canadians, is very negative towards places where English isn't spoken or French isn't spoken, where you have people who are continuously looking at the homeland as something that they want to be in touch with, or even worse, you know, to have very specific relationships with the consulates or the foreign missions from the countries that they left behind. I think this is part of what is making some Canadians uneasy about the effect of immigration when they don't see the assimilation that they would like to see from newcomers to the country.
Before the gates opened at the 115th P&E Fair, TheBreaker.News visited Hastings Park for a sneak preview. For the better part of 35 years, Northwest Territories-born David Billings has made a living turning sand into art. The proprietor of Sand Demons Sand Sculpture Company is the creative director of the P&E's Sands of Wonder Sculpture Exhibit, which will take shape throughout the fair, running until Labor Day.
I've been sculpting for close to 30 years, since 1989 when we created the company. So we've been doing projects for the P&E back a decade ago. We did a number of years of contracts and created some amazing sculptures with of course, our sculptors that we're bringing in internationally from around the world.
So you got started in the 1990s.
Yes.
How did it go from being a hobby to a profession and also to a craft, an art and a craft?
Well, most of us started on the beach. We were creating sculptures for small competitions, and then the competitions grew and we became, people recognized the value of sand sculpture and how it attracts people to events or to shopping centers and so on. And so at the years it grew and developed, you know, people created more, they became better, and it became really a form of artwork that people love to create. One of the reasons is we can create very massive sculptures in a very short period of time. They're temporal, but they can be long-lasting in the way that we create them and the way we prepare the blocks and so on.
And it's become very sophisticated. You've got a whole construction crew here and a form that you're working around and equipment, vehicles. It's not just handiwork anymore.
No. There's definitely a technique in how we prepare the blocks so that they can be very strong. They can last a long period of time. And we're using sand that is very clean and fine, so people can create really nice, smooth pieces of work.
So what is the key? The sand must be the key, but
yes.
Where do you find the best sand in the world to work with?
Well, the sand varies everywhere we go. We have a selection where we go and we test the sand and so on, and we find the correct sand that we need. Sand is the most important key, of course. It needs to be sharp sand, not like beach sand that's rolling up, because those grains become like marbles, so you can't stack them. But sharp sand, you can compact and sticks together. So when we're building a sculpture or building a formwork and preparing the blocks, we use a lot of sand, a lot of water, and it's mixed well, and then we compact it. In the past, we used to compact it by hand, of course, and shovel it. Now we prefer to use machinery because we get a better pack and stronger blocks.
You're not using salt water here, you're using fresh water?
Fresh water, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, salt water works. I mean, we use it, of course, when we're in locations where we need to. I do a lot of international projects where they're doing very large projects like this, some much larger than this. And of course, they're pumping the seawater in to use instead of fresh water.
So what will people see here as the P&E progresses, and when will the finished products be?
Well, we're really excited to have people come down and see them creating the works. We have four solos that are going to be here, or four solos creating pieces along the road, Miller Drive. And they have free reign of what they're going to create. So they've all came up with some beautiful designs. People need to come down. They're all going to be different from South Korea, Taiwan, Canada, of course, and the Ukraine. So they all have their own ideas. So you got to come down and see them. We're not going to release those yet. The main block is going to be a Canadiana-themed sculpture. All of us will have some part in creating it. And there's going to be a lot of iconic Canadian items in it for our pieces for people to see and enjoy. So, and it's really going to pop out. So So we're a few days away from final preparations. And then we have the opening, of course, on the 16th. Everybody will be here making sculptures. And then we're finishing up the 24th, 25th. So that's when the finished product is. But I encourage people to come down and see it being created, because that's the fun of it.
So what's the feeling when it's all over and when it has to come down? Because this is, unfortunately, transitory art.
Yeah.
It only lasts for a short period of time, unless, of course, there are some that are preserved.
Well, we a lot of the projects that I work on, the international projects, they're very long term. We create the project, we build the sculptures, carve them and everything in the spring, and they keep them throughout the whole summer. So there's a lot of maintenance and things that go on. The P&E, of course, is the fair is a short period of time. So yeah, they come in after, unfortunately, and take all the sculptures down. We're a bit used to that. When it happens on the beach and you make something, sometimes, you know, it's difficult to handle when the things are coming down after you spent all that time working on them. So.
Now, you're also in the business of giant pumpkin carving and and snow and ice.
Yes, well, most of us work in a lot of different mediums. Chocolate is one. Certainly pumpkins, snow, ice. So they're all very different mediums, but they're all temporary, right? So I think the enjoyment is being able to create something that after you're finished with it, it'll actually go back to nature. So that's a wonderful thing also, because we're using our resources of the planet to make something beautiful for people to see, and it goes back to the earth.
Does this day and age, when costs are rising, when costs of sand is probably harder to get just because of construction competition, but
yes.
Every year we get different weather that does things to our supply of snow and ice, as well as to pumpkins.
Yeah.
How does that affect what you do?
Oh, I mean, it's affected us a great deal in regards to working with clients. I mean, the expense of all the materials, all the lumber, as you see here, even the sand costs have gone up, as you mentioned, all equipment costs. So it affects us because, you know, the clients want to have beautiful works and they want to have large scale projects and so on, but budgets are more tight because of that. So everything gets a little bit downscaled. Everybody gets a little bit tighter on what they can do. So it's just something we have to manage with as time goes on.
And finally, any advice for anyone out there who lives near a beach and loves to just try their own hobby on the sand, or someone even because Halloween's coming up wants to do something special with their pumpkin, or even in the winter snow and ice. Any advice to people who are looking at trying to take it up as a hobby?
Well my advice for people with sand, what we normally do, and this is a bit of a trick, most people don't know it, they take buckets down and they fill them with sand, flip them over, and then try and pull the bucket off, and usually the block sort of breaks up. What we do is we actually do the reverse. We take the bucket, turn it upside down, cut the top off, put the sand in and compact it. Then it's like a little sleeve, and you just slide it off and you have a nice clean block. That's a good way to start when you're practicing getting familiar with it. The best thing about it is just go down and have fun with the sand, you know. Create what you can, use some materials from the beach, shells and so on, to make designs. And it makes it fun, and as you go on, you do more, you get more creative, and you can build bigger ones. We now use, of course, boxes. So we create boxes, fill them with sand, compact them, and then take the form off, and then we have a block of sand. So that's one of the best techniques.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In Taiwan news, Texas gains ground with Taiwanese investors. KPMG cites legal reforms, tax advantages over Delaware in U.S. market shift. Traditionally, Delaware has been the top choice for Taiwanese firms because of its specialized court of chancery and extensive case law, which provide legal predictability. Texas's lack of corporate income tax has attracted more Taiwanese firms, despite Delaware's historic dominance. Texas is emerging as a preferred destination for companies because it offers a business-friendly tax system and strengthened corporate legal framework, said KPMG Taiwan. In ABC News Australia, local governments battle coastal erosion as structures crumble. Demolition of a popular lookout in Lancelin has begun due to the risk of it crumbling into the ocean. Local governments in Western Australia's Midwest are fighting coastal erosion as it eats away at public infrastructure. Coastal engineering lecturer Arnold Van Ruyen says governments need to tailor erosion management programs for individual towns. In Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong man who allegedly added urine to bottled soft drinks denied bail. Wearing a dark gray t-shirt emblazoned with the slogan "Enjoy Coca-Cola," defendant Lo Kim Gai appeared at Kowloon City Magistrate Courts on August 12th to face the charge of administering poison or other destructive or noxious thing with intent to injure. The maximum penalty for the offense is 3 years in prison. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Salem Statesman Journal, Oregon could see $15 billion, that's $15 billion in cuts from Trump's big beautiful bill, analysis says. Governor Tina Kotek shared the projections and more detailed impacts calculated by Oregon's chief financial officer, along with state agencies, on August the 11th. In Crosscut, Washington families struggle to rebuild after utility-sparked wildfires. 5 years after its power lines started a devastating fire in Malden, Avista has settled lawsuits for $27 million, but fallen behind on disaster prevention. At least 128 individuals and 51 insurance companies joined lawsuits against Avista over the damage, arguing the company failed to clock the danger posed by the diseased tree and should have de-energized its lines in response to a red flag warning predicting high winds amid summer drought. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. FIFA seeks free labor while executives enjoy big salaries. And on the 80th anniversary of the Hiroshima bombing, sounds of Vancouver's memorial unveiling from 1987. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone. The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
British Columbians who have left behind countries ruined by fascism and communism. August 23rd is Black Ribbon Day, the annual Canadian Day of Remembrance for the victims of Nazi and Soviet communist crimes.
And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar? Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 17th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 17th of August in 2008, American swimmer Michael Phelps became the first 8 gold medal winner at the Olympics in Beijing? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Visit me there too. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. You can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com.
Until next week.